Welcome to the Student Paramedic Podcast. Welcome back to the Student Paramedic Podcast. I'm Alex and I'm your host, and today we are sitting with Tiana. She is both a paramedic and a nurse, and today we're taking the opportunity to have a chat to her about what that was like doing the dual degree and how she did both of those post-degree as well. She's got a lot of great insight and we can't wait to have a chat to her. So Tiana, would you like to introduce yourself?
Excellent. Hello, everybody. I'm Tiana. So I know Alex from teaching her at university. I do a few different paramedic and nursing roles around the place.
Very nice. So whereabouts do you do your nursing and your paramedics?
So I am casual for the Queensland Ambulance Service and also for Queensland Health. So I'm an emergency nurse and obviously just a standard ACP2 paramedic. And so I have worked across both Brisbane and the Gold Coast for both of those.
Very nice. So I guess we'll go into a bit about what drew you to doing the dual degree?
I probably don't have the most idealistic introduction into that. As a student, when I was in high school, I was hellbound on doing medicine. Definitely was not smart enough to do medicine. And so I decided that to do an undergrad and I would do paramedicine because I wanted something a bit more practical than the biomed that a lot of people do. Because I wanted a job while I was going to study to be a doctor, because that was the grand plan. And I got through first year of the single degree of paramedicine and I went, geez, I really like this. I think I'm going to stick with it, particularly after coming back from placement. And I thought, if I'm going to do this, let's do it right. And so I added in the nursing as of second year. Mm. So in semester one, second year, I took on 5 subjects to catch myself up. But I was lucky the way that the course was structured at the time. That was the only, I was only one subject behind, essentially, because all the others were either credited or exactly the same. And then I did the double degree from that point forward. And in the end, I was super involved in a lot of nursing stuff on campus and student organisations and stuff. So it was best thing I ever did.
That's really cool because, to be honest with you, that's exactly what I was thinking of doing when I went through school. I wanted to do medicine. And I said, I don't want to do biomed. I want to get hands-on, get that experience before doing med. So that's really cool and you've stuck with it. And it's kind of addictive too. I'm starting to feel the same.
Very addictive.
That's really cool. So when did you graduate?
So graduated in 2014.
Okay, very
from
nice.
The double. So I started in 2011.
Cool.
4 years.
So you've obviously gone and done both now. How difficult was that process of applying for both? Did you get taught how to do it, or did you just have to figure it out on your way through that last year?
Absolutely had to figure it out on my own. Or rather, there was a group of us figuring it out together, but we were all students. It was really interesting. Obviously, because of doing the double degree, we don't get electives, which in paramedicine, where I studied, there wasn't electives to be had anyway, but on the nursing side, there was. And so one of those electives was about graduation preparation. And so that was one of the ones that got eliminated from our degree by having done a graduate program. So we didn't really even have the nursing side of how do you write a nursing resume? How do you, what is a graduate portal? Where do you put your resume and application? What does that even look like? We didn't have that because we got credited for those credit points. I was very, very fortunate the year that I went through. So I'll talk a little bit about my experience, but I do have some knowledge about what it looks like these days as well. So I was super fortunate. So the year that I went through, they offered pre-graduation employment to us. So basically what that meant is we got an email in July offering us to start our application process for a job. And so the uni was really, really accommodating of that. Nursing placements had to get shifted and all sorts of things changed. But essentially what it meant was we finished all of our classes by the end of August, I believe. And I started induction in September. Yeah, and so, yeah, that was when my GPIP, or my graduate program started, was in September. And so I technically wasn't graduated. We didn't have any epaulets or anything on our shoulders. We were just sort of, they called us EEPs. And I was like, oh, EEP, it's an EEP. But anyhow, once we finished our final OSCEs, finished graduation, then we got our red epaulets, and then we went through and did our program there. And so what I did, and the advice that we got, was that for nursing grad programs at the time, I'm not sure exactly what it's like these days, but at the time you only had 2 years to apply for a nursing grad program before they sort of stopped looking at you. And so we were told to apply in that first year. And so one of the places I had done one of my final year placements for nursing, I knew that they did a grad program intake for the nursing side of things in September. So I thought, oh, that might work out 12 months after I finished my other grad program. So I actually applied for grad programs in that first year, and went to interview. Like halfway through induction, I was like ducking off to go to nursing interviews. Again, my employer at the time was super accommodating. They're like, yep, off you go. Like, that's fine, which I'm super thankful for. And so I was advised in like January that I was successful at interview, and we had the ability to give a start date, essentially. So I said, please don't call me until after July, because I knew the mandatory part of my ambulance grant program would be finished by then. So any point after that, I would have been happy to sort of resign from my position and switch across. It worked out super perfectly. So I was a bit cheeky, and the last 2 weeks of my ambulance grad program, I booked annual leave just in case my nursing grad program started then, because I knew it would be September, but I didn't know when. And I literally finished my ambulance grad program on a Friday, including my 2 weeks annual leave. So I still got that off. And I literally started my nursing grad year on the Monday. Like, it was just, it worked out really, really perfectly, which all sounds rainbows and daisies, and it's unfortunately not an option anymore. But there are certainly plenty of ways that students can do a very similar thing, just probably not quite as neatly as I was able to.
Yeah, definitely. Because we do get told a lot, which one do you want to be? Like, you know, pick one.
Yeah, and you just have to say whichever one, whichever placement you're on, that's the answer.
Exactly. When you go to the nursing ones, I want to be a nurse. When you go to para, I want to be a para.
In reality, you're like, I have absolutely no idea. Yeah. I would like a job to start off with, and then I'll figure it out once I've got a bit of experience.
Exactly. Especially in the current climate where getting jobs in both is becoming a little bit difficult.
Really tough.
But yeah, so I guess what was the most challenging aspect of your grad year in both?
I did obviously my ambulance one first. For me, I think the most challenging thing was like navigating the grown-up work world. So I was straight out of high school into uni. I'd had a few part-time jobs, but a uni student level part-time job. I was never in anything particularly fancy. And so to navigate work relationships, to navigate shift work, absolutely, and all of that stuff. And I think for me, just figuring out, paramedicine requires you to know and remember a lot of stuff. And I think I battled with that a little bit, just sort of going, oh my God, what if I go to the kid at the bottom of the pool and I can't remember how fast to do compressions, or how, you know, how many joules I need to shock that child at, or something around that. And I think that was always just like a little bit of anxiety in the back of my head going, oh my God, what if I turn up to this child? Or, I mean, I think it's always the child that I'm worried about turning up to. Like, I've got this floppy baby, and what if I forget what to do? I think, yeah, that was definitely something that used to play in my mind as well.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense. Because I had a chat to another graduate paramedic recently, and it'll be our first episode for our listeners out there. But we did talk about how it's the things that you're trying to remember are not just so you can forget it for after the exam. It's so that at 2 a.m. on that night shift, you can remember it. You need to know it. So that's the difference, I think, in nursing and para, is you actually have to know all of the content you're learning. It's not something that you can just throw away. So how did you find doing both degrees and having to remember all the different content for both? Because people think, oh, they must be such, you know, the same content, all of that, but it's actually incredibly different.
Very, very different. I think the biggest lesson I learned when I was going through uni in that regard, and like sort of flicking between the two, because you'd be doing the same subjects in the same semester, so you'd be putting your, and sometimes from hour to hour, you'd be walking out of one tutorial and into another, so you still have to take off your paramedic hat and put on your nursing hat. I had to really learn to grasp what the subject was asking of me and what the lecturer, the tutor, the whoever was asking of me, and adapt my skills to that. So I think, and not being frustrated about that process, like understanding that it was different for a reason, and now having a little bit more experience and a bit more maturity about it, I'm like, oh, of course they're different because it's completely different. But at the time I was like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. And I remember distinctly, I think it must have been my second semester of nursing. So once I really got into the nitty gritty of clinical care stuff, and they were asking for a nursing diagnosis, and I was like, it was an APO patient. So I was like, oh, APO. And my tutor was like, no. And I was like, but it's APO. They've got crackles. They've got heart failure. Like, it's APO. And they're like, that's a clinical diagnosis. That's not a nursing diagnosis. And I was like, I had no, like, I just couldn't grasp that concept. And I think that for me was a really good lesson in, just because it's still clinical practice doesn't mean that we behave or care for patients in the same way. And I think, like, a thing that I tell a lot of people, particularly people interested in the double degree or interested in exploring both professions, because there's a lot of paramedics who just do a single degree and come back and want to do nursing later as well, is I strongly believe that being a nurse has made me a better paramedic, and being a paramedic has made me a better nurse. I think the nice part of being a nurse, like the thinking outside the box, the holistic care that sometimes we find it a bit easier to forget on road, the community stuff, and just understanding what happens on the other side of those doors, I think that's so useful to bring into the pre-hospital environment. And likewise, I think, and this was probably another thing I struggled with a little bit when I was a student, but I really value the critical thinking that we're taught in emergency care, so paramedicine. And sometimes, just due to the nature of scope of practice, it's not, I mean, there's still critical thinking, don't get me wrong, but it's a different way of thinking, because for paramedicine, we're taught to critically think to end up with a diagnosis and a treatment plan, whereas in nursing, we're part of a holistic team and there's like 10 other people making that decision. So there's less responsibility, or rather different responsibilities, and different expectations and all sorts of things. But I think having both has made me better at like the opposite profession.
Definitely. And you'd find that because you're a triage nurse, and that ties in very nicely with pre-hospital care and all of that. So do you find that makes your nursing job easier, knowing that, you know, the paramedic's coming in, you're like, oh, well, you know, I'm in that, I know that world. Makes it so much easier, seamless, and you can, does it just make you a better nurse? Do you do ED nursing as well, other than triage as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So the process for ED nursing is you sort of just go in as a sort of basic level sort of nurse. So you'll care for the acute patients or the short stay patients. And then most EDs take about 3 years for you to be fully upskilled. So I have actually only been triaging for about 12 months. Because it took that long by the time you get resus trained, and then triage is one of the last skills that you learn. So I don't know if I'm quite seamless yet, but certainly I think it gives me, we hand over in different ways pre-hospitally and in the hospital. We actually use a different acronym. So pre-hospitally we use I missed AMBO quite frequently. Most services use that. And in hospital we use ISBAR, which is a lot shorter. And those of you that are nursing students will be familiar with the old SBAR handover. I'm sure your facilitators have wrapped you over the knuckles for that one. But they're really different and differently structured, and one's got a lot of information and one doesn't have quite as much. And I think having an understanding of that makes me perhaps a little bit more patient at triage, and because I understand the format that the person is handing over to me in, so I can structure what I'm writing because I know where they're going to put their information, whereas perhaps some nurses like that don't have that experience and are newer to triage sort of go, oh my God, what is this paramedic trying to tell me? I have no idea. You know, the information's all jumbled. Obviously the nurses that have experience at triage get to know that anyway, but that certainly helped my transition to being a new triage nurse, is I already sort of like got it and I understood what sort of information I was receiving. And understanding the processes, it means I could probably ask some more pointed questions at times, like, oh, you know, how did you extricate her, or you know, what did you see in the house, or did you call such and such and what did they say? And you know, that sort of thing helped as well. And even just something as simple as like if I without writing down drug doses, I knew how to spell methoxyfluorine.
Yeah, that one can tie you up a little bit.
Yep, it does.
Even that's a good point when you said what did you see in their house and things like that. We get told that it's a really important thing to hand over because
incredibly valuable.
As paramedics, you guys and all of our students going on placement and everything get a good insight into how that person lives, and that can, you know, mean a lot for that person's care and yep. transition back into community and home life. So yeah.
You can have the most well-dressed little old man with his button-up, pressed, you know, freshly ironed shirt, but you in his house, he's got no food in the fridge, he's got rubbish everywhere, and it's but he keeps himself clean and tidy. So in a hospital setting, he looks like a well put together person, but you see his home and you're like, oh, he actually needs a lot of home services to help him do his ADLs.
Definitely. And so with that insight, do you, because you teach on in your day-to-day job as well.
I do.
Do you like to give the, I guess, the real world sort of things that should be taught and stuff, and do you try and teach that to your students on a day-to-day basis, so things that aren't in a textbook, so, hey, they need to know this.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably something that I'm particularly passionate about as an educator is there's – I think we get into the habit sometimes of studying for the exam, and I think we can almost sometimes as educators feel pressured to teach to the exam. We obviously don't just do that. We make sure we teach you the whole spectrum of things, but I like to make sure my students understand the real world, like, yes, this is on paper what the clinical diagnosis will look like, but I've seen it look like this before, or I've had to figure that out by doing these things. So for example, taking a sample history, like figuring out what medication, what past medical history a patient has. If you've got a patient with impaired memory, they can't tell you that they've got blood pressure and cholesterol, but they may not also have their medicine packed up in a nice little box on the kitchen table. So you've got to go searching for those things. And so it's like, oh, just little things like, you know, people generally keep their medicine, you know, above the fridge or in the bathroom or whatever, you know, like just little tips that's just going to help that transition a little bit smooth. I'm sure I don't succeed sometimes.
No, I think from personal experience, having you teach me last year, you showed us the cannula, like when we're doing cannulation and how to set up a cannula and all of the bits and bobs you need, and doing it in order and like having these things just to make your life so much easier. And that does make a difference.
I'm glad.
For sure. Well, very nice. So I guess then, as a student then, back, you know, a few years ago, and having all this experience that you have now, what is one thing you'd tell yourself, or has something changed that you used to think to be true? So have you gone, oh, you know, I wish I knew that as a student. What is it?
I think there's probably a couple of things that fall into that category. I think number one, listen in pharmacology, because that's really useful and really hard to catch yourself up on. And even little things like, I wish I could go back and take bioscience again, because just having some context, like I would like save all of your lectures. So like download them somewhere. So when you get to second and third year and you're starting to learn a bit more context, it's a really good place to go back and refresh some of that underpinning pathophys stuff. Because I mean, you can search for it online, but sometimes I just want like a really pointed dot point list of, oh, that's right. And that sort of refreshes me. I was doing some tutoring when I was a student. So I was tutoring like a first year when I was in fourth year, and I was tutoring in bioscience, and it was so helpful for me to be like, oh my God, that's what the Krebs cycle is. Still don't remember it now, so that's okay. But you know, just refreshing that sort of stuff. But I think the biggest lesson I probably learned, and one that I really make sure I reinforce in the students, particularly as they get into like the third and fourth year, is you are not studying for the exam. You are studying for 2 a.m. when a mum hands you a floppy baby, and you need to know how to assess that patient and what to do, how to manage mum, how to manage the team, who, like which backup you need. That's what you're studying for. And I think students sort of have that epiphany at some point in their university career. Most of them, some of them, it's not until they actually start clinical work that they sort of get to that point. But it's probably something that you have, like a process you have to go through in your own time. But just to hear that, perhaps it'd be nice to just get that sort of ticking away in the back of your mind. So you sort of go, yeah, you know what? I'm going to not just study like what they've told me might be on the exam. I'm going to make sure I study all of this content and reach a bit wider and perhaps listen to some great podcasts or, you know, look
maybe
at some...
Maybe even the student paramedic podcast.
I reckon that would be an excellent one to look at. But, yeah, looking at some YouTube videos or some textbooks or something else to just broaden those horizons a little bit. Trying not to take the old P's get degrees approach to this because we are not... This isn't a job where you can just do 50%. You can't turn up to work and put in your 51% pass mark. Like, you need to be putting in a high distinction level of practice. And I'm not saying you need to get sevens on your assignments. That's unrealistic for everybody. You know, not everyone can do that. But I mean, your level of commitment to the job and your the level of care you need to provide. Everyone wants the high distinction student level of care for their mum, their child, their whoever. And I think we should be striving for that. And we don't get it right all the time, but certainly if that's your goal, then that's you're going to get closer to it.
Everyone in the community, if they dial 000, they just want someone who's going to show up and they expect the best care.
Yeah, they want you to be on top of your game.
They don't know the difference between a graduate and, you know, someone who's been 40 years in the job.
No, and their emergency is going to come whenever it is. It doesn't matter if it's 2 a.m. or 4 p.m. or you haven't had a meal break all day. Like, they expect the top care no matter what time of day it is.
Definitely. And how do you think, like, students can – I guess attitude plays a big, big role in it. Mm-hmm. And so how do you think students can – have a good attitude towards learning and then also towards going on to placement?
I think you're absolutely right. It's attitude, but I think you need to set up really good habits for yourself. Like, I think actually this is probably something else I'd like to go back and tell graduate paramedic Tiana, is to create some good study habits. Like, I unfortunately fell into the trap of uni was done, so study was done. Absolutely not the situation if you're in a clinical career. Nursing is exactly the same. Study is not done when you're finished. And I'm not very good at informal study. And that's been, like, I still struggle sometimes to just go and look stuff up. I really like formalized, watch this lecture, do these activities, and then you'll learn the thing. And so I think create for yourself good study habits where you're not just studying the lecture and the tutorial content. You're figuring out where to look for extra stuff. And please don't stop that when you graduate, particularly if you don't get a job straight away. Like, you need to keep yourself fresh so that on day one you're still that top-notch paramedic as best you can be. I'm sure some of the practical skills will decrease a little bit, but we can reteach those. The critical thinking stuff is hard to reteach. So get in the habit of that self-directed study of reaching out, figuring out what works for you. Are you a videos person? Great. So go and look at some YouTube stuff, some Khan Academy or whatever. If you're a journal articles person, then go and get up with all of that. But keep those habits through your grad year and beyond, because I didn't do that in my grad year. And the person I worked with didn't enjoy that sort of thing either. So I didn't sort of have, I mean, not that it's their fault. I should have had the professional responsibility to do it myself, but I felt like I wasn't in an environment where that was as encouraged. And so I feel like I fell out of the habit of studying. And it never stops in this job. There's always going to be new protocols or new clinical diagnoses to understand and new presentations.
Yeah, definitely. So even as students going on placement, having a group of friends there, where you start to really cultivate a culture of, like, learning and...
Absolutely.
And making that the normal thing. So not being like, oh, you're studying. Like, why are you studying? Like, actually engage other people and make it fun. Because some of the tips we've had from graduate paramedics who have had to wait a little bit of time before they go on road have been, you know, grab a group of mates, go over some scenarios. You know, there's so many things out on Instagram and Facebook and different groups, and they have so many different things. And you're right, there's YouTube. There's always a different way to learn now, and that makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
That's really cool. So I'm mindful of your time. I will go through our last couple of questions. They're the questions we ask everyone.
Okay.
To get a bit of a diverse response. Mm-hmm. So the first one is, what mistake have you made that has resulted in your greatest learning?
Ooh. I think probably the mistake that I've made that's resulted in the biggest learning would be around standing up for patients. I think I don't know where it comes from. It's a cultural thing, I think. But we are in this habit of the primary officer, secondary officer. And I think particularly so the mistake I'm thinking of happened in my grad year. And so I was secondary officer in a situation. And in retrospect, and to be honest, not even in retrospect, at the time I felt that the patient wasn't being treated as that top-notch care that they deserved. But I felt absolutely disempowered to change that. And that situation occurred 5 years ago, and I still regret that I didn't stand up for that patient and interrupt the care that they were receiving and change it. It was about psychosocial care. It wasn't clinical care. And I think that was perhaps why, like we knew that if someone was giving the wrong drug dose, we knew how to stand up for that. But this was about the language that was used with the patient and the even just the way that the clinicians stood around the patient. Like they stood up really high and the patient was seated. Just those sort of simple things, but it really affected the patient, and it was visible that it was affecting the patient. But I couldn't in that moment figure out how to change that. And I literally just got in the car. I was obviously driving because I was secondary officer. I just got in the car and like cried all the way to hospital. And I had a poor, I don't know who the student was because it was a one-off shift that I did. So some invisible paramedic now was my student back then, and she was just looking at me going, "Are you okay?" I was like, "This should not have occurred like this." But I think the lesson in that to me is that learn early how to stand up for yourself, but more importantly for patient care. Learn how to have those difficult conversations with colleagues. Like this person that I was working with was 20 years my senior, both clinically and like just older than me. And so I felt really unable to do that. But learn how to have those difficult conversations early, because I wouldn't want someone else to have to be in that situation. It was really uncomfortable, and absolutely not what the patient deserved that day.
Yeah, definitely. That would be very difficult. Have you changed that now? So how do you have that difficult conversation? Do you have a go-to? Or
I think I've thought about how I would interrupt that conversation if I had to go back. And I think what I would simply say is, hey, why don't I have a chat? Or, hey, do you mind if – actually, but maybe not even do you mind if, because that's giving them the option to say no. But I've since learned about, like, graded assertiveness. So there's the PACE model. There's, like, a probe, ask – I forget what the S is. So the C is challenge and then emergency. But you can use different types of language in different levels of emergency situations. And I must admit, I probably didn't learn that framework until I was nursing, and that was 12 months after this incident had occurred. And so I think – if you're not good with, like I was a young female working with a very senior male paramedic. I didn't feel like I had a voice, but we absolutely do. I was a clinician just like he was. So if you find yourself that you feel like you get put in disempowered situations, at least have a framework to fall back on. Like if you're not good at, you're not a big boisterous person that's comfortable having those conversations, make some rules now about what you'll say in the future. So if I was ever in that situation, these are the sorts of things I might try and say, like, hey, let's just have a chat, and pull the paramedic aside and express your concerns. Or, hey, do you mind if I have a chat with the patient? Or, I don't mind being patient care, why don't I step in? Or whatever suits your personality and whatever. But perhaps coming up with some language or some rules now, so you can do the hard thinking now and think, if I was in a stressful situation, what are the words that would come to mind? And let's like almost make a rule of them being the things I will say. And then it just means in that situation when you're a bit stunned and shocked and going, oh my God, what's going on here? You've already got pre-prepared language that you can sort of use to get you started. And then from there, hopefully things will flow.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good way to put it, because I read in The Good, The Bad, The Ugly Paramedic about even some things like, hey, why don't you go get the stretcher while I go do this? And I thought, oh, that's a really good way to do it. And conflict resolution is something that students always ask us, you know, what happens if our mentors and us, we don't get along, what happens with that? And how do you approach that? You've mentored students, obviously, so in both nursing and paramedics?
Yes, absolutely.
So have you ever had to sort of, I guess, guide students on how to deal with difficult situations with just their mentors? Because that can be quite distressing for, say, a six-week placement. You're stuck with a mentor that you guys don't get on well. How do you sort of, I guess, go about that?
I think it probably depends on what the cause is. Like it depends on whether it's like a personality clash or if they're being like they're bullying or harassing you or assaulting you in some way, shape or form. Obviously, there's a lot of university processes that you can access. I can only speak for the university I work for, but certainly there would have to be processes at all universities or if you're not studying at a university, whatever agency you're studying through, they will have processes for that. But in terms of, I'm presuming you're asking like that day to day, what do I do when I turn up to work? I think you have to, and I do advise my students of this, before you go on placement, you need to decide what your limits are. So you need to decide how much slack am I willing to cop? Like, where's the line between providing me feedback and bullying me? Or where's the line between I'm comfortable doing that skill or that's where I'm drawing the line, I'm not ready for that yet, I don't feel competent enough on CPR, for example. You're like, you know what, the first time we see it, I want to see it before I do it, or whatever that might be for you. But having a good hard think before you go on that first placement and going, where's my line for a lot of things? And so I think that can help you sort of get started. And you're like, you know what, I was willing to take a joke or two, but that one was personal. That was my line. You know, I feel that my mentor is unfairly requesting tasks of me or is expecting my scope to be higher than what it is. So figuring out, I think having your OIC as a great point of call is a great place to start. You are there as a student, but you are there to be respected as well. You're not just someone's lackey. So I think having the confidence in your position there is really helpful, and not just taking slack because you think it's the student's job, because it's absolutely not. You're there to be respected and you're there to learn, and the paramedics need to respect that of you as well.
Yeah, that's great advice. Thanks for that. So our next one is, what is one piece of advice, and just briefly, that you would give to any paramedic student? Starting out, or, you know, they might be in their third, fourth year. Just one general piece.
Make flashcards.
Flashcards?
Flashcards. Yeah. Yep. It was fourth year before I got around to the flashcard bandwagon. They did me well.
I think they do work well for things like when you have to learn the DTPs and things like that, where you're quizzing yourself.
Yeah, flashcards and a whiteboard. Mm-hmm. I'm a good concepts person. I like to get out a whiteboard. Is that the sort of thing you're looking for?
Yeah, that's great.
And if it's on Blackboard, it's important. I think I was, unfortunately, certainly in the beginning, and it hurt me in the end. In the beginning, I was like, oh, I probably don't need to do that reading. I probably don't need to look at that textbook. And then I got to fourth year and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have read all those textbooks. Because there was so much stuff that I should have spent 4 years cramming into my brain, and I had to squeeze it into 1 year. Got there in the end, obviously. But certainly not an ideal way to learn. So I think spend some time laying down those foundations and the clinical foundations, and keep revisiting stuff. Don't let like pharmacology be only the thing you did in second year. You need to come back to it and be like, oh, I've learnt this new drug, why don't I go back and look at the pharmacology, or keep revisiting those early underpinning concept subjects and keep figuring out how they apply to the current one and refreshing on stuff.
Yeah, very cool. That's a good way to put it. You know, definitely being – that takes a lot of to build that habit, a lot of planning too, which is really, really important.
And I think that's what it's all about. You've got to build those habits, and that's what will carry you through. Like if you build those habits in uni, it'll be hard to break them when you graduate, and it means you'll keep that up.
Yeah, definitely. And our last question is, what did you used to believe to be true that you no longer believe to be true?
Well, I guess I used to believe that it would be too hard basket to do 2 degrees, and it's not. I mean, uni was tough, and weaseling into both professions can be tough because you have to, like, that's two whole professions you need to keep stuff up. And I'm not going to lie, like, it's not always easy to keep up with CPD because I need 50 hours of CPD per year and X number of clinical hours and things, but it's absolutely worthwhile having both. I think I thought that I would drop one eventually, and I'm holding on to both with two hands to make sure that I can keep them both going.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you. Well, thank you for listening, guys. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com. So we'll catch you in the next one. Thank you.